Hello and welcome to the Utah Puck Report. I'm your host, Jay Stevens. Very special guest today. We have Morgan. Say your last name for me.
Marietti.
Marietti. And that's how I would have, think I would have pronounced it. That's how it looks. And you and I have crossed paths like, I don't know, 8 million times, but never officially met until today.
Yeah.
So thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah.
There's a, you've got a cool story. You've got a lot of stuff going on. And we want to hear all about it. So first off, tell me, how did you get into hockey?
Yeah. Started playing hockey when I was 5 years old. So I grew up, I have one older brother. His name is Zach. He became a rink rat really early on in life. And we had one uncle that played ice hockey in high school up in Ogden, Utah. And Zach wanted to follow in his footsteps. So jumped right on the ice and fell in love with it. 4 or 5 years later, I came around and started to hang out at the rink as well, became a rink rat. And my first pair of skates were figure skates.
Oh.
The way the story goes that I'm told is my sassy five-year-old self just wasn't taking it and wanted to do exactly what my brother was doing and my uncle. And jumped out on the ice, got those figure skates on, hated it, took them right off, threw them in the garbage, played hockey ever since.
Perfect. That's what I like to hear. That's what should be done with figure skates.
But,
I know I'm going to get some hate mail about that, but yeah. All right, so that's cool. And you played organized hockey?
I did, yeah. I grew up playing in Golden Spikes, so I grew up at the ice sheet. Back then, did not have any opportunities to play on an all-girls team until about my bantam years.
Yeah.
It was about the time when girls hockey really kind of hit the ground here in Utah. Thankful to lots of individuals who really spearheaded the girls' hockey movement in the state. And my parents had a large playing in that as well. And grateful for them to step up, because my journey until that time frame of about 13, 14 years old was in the co-ed environment.
Right.
And I absolutely loved my experience growing up in the sport of ice hockey. It was by far my favorite sport. Multi-sport athlete, loved playing any type of team sport, competitive by nature, but really fell in love with hockey. And I think it's just one of the main reasons I fell in love with it is just how unique it is and the autonomy that you get within the sport, but yet you're achieving a goal as a team. And it had my heart from the beginning. So playing in the co-ed environment was one that I personally thrived in, but I know that not every female does. And that's part of my reason for starting the team up at the university is that we now have the opportunity to continue to provide an all-female atmosphere for these girls to play the sport beyond high school.
What year was this that you were, what years were your Bantam years?
Oh, early 2000s.
Early 2000s, okay.
Yep.
Because I'm trying to put that all together because, yeah, it took a long time to seem to get women's teams here. And we've talked about it on here before. There would be, you know, there'd be an all-women's team, but it'd have, like, a 14-year-old in net.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And then, like, the first line would be all 21-year-olds. So there really wasn't a good place for a female to go play and develop.
Yeah.
And granted, you play and develop co-ed,
mm-hmm.
but there's got to be... And I'm guessing, and I've seen it with my daughter a little bit, but you're not always included in everything, and then you miss the locker room speeches lot of times. A lot of coaches now realize, okay, everybody get dressed, and then we bring the girls into the locker room as well, and then we have the chalk talk, and then we have the stuff. But for a long time, it was not that way. Like I said, I've seen that with my daughter. She grew up like a pretty aggressive athlete too, and It was tough. And then I realized that as a coach, though, too, because there were times that I'd coach and it started with one and then I'd have multiple mm-hmm. females on my travel teams. And sometimes you would say something in the locker room. You're like, man, that was the whole team needed to hear that. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have the same impact if now I got to go tell the girls separately.
Yeah.
And that, so besides that, are there other things that were like maybe holding back a female at that time mm-hmm. period besides the talk and stuff like that? Or do you feel like you were included in with the team mm-hmm. or did they accept you?
You know, that's interesting to think about. I definitely was impacted by that. I think every female who played in the co-ed environment in one way, shape or form had situations throughout the year where they weren't included in the team talk or 5 minutes late to the off-ice warm-up just because they simply weren't informed because they were getting dressed in the bathroom 20 feet away or whatever. And so those nuances were a challenge then. They still are for many girls out west who have to or would like to play in the co-ed environment. Many reasons why females are choosing to do so. Some there just isn't the opportunity, and others, like in my case, really enjoyed it for the most part. So I would say those were the biggest factors, but definitely you have just changes in the social setting between males and females at those early years of development. That change over time from your mite and squirt years, those are more friendships, and definitely everyone's out there to have a good time. It's like that four-year-old who was mic'd up. I just always think of those days. Just being so much fun and having a great experience. And then getting older and the competitive nature really coming out, and just changes in general between male and females definitely played a role. And yeah, I see that with girls now. Looking at just at the data from USA Hockey, we see a significant drop-off of girls ages 12 to 16. And those years are so pivotal in life and in sport. And so for me as a coach at the college level, being cognizant of the fact that we still today in 2019 have this dropout rate that we were seeing 10, 20 years ago, like what can we be doing to change that? And I really think it comes back to coaching from the heart. And when I think of my experiences on the co-ed environment, I was able to thrive in the ways that I did in my hockey career due to the coaches that really coached from the heart. Right. And had every player's best interest in mind.
So you played high school?
I played high school, but my journey kind of took a turn from Utah after my Bantam years. And I chose to go away to prep school at that time.
Oh, okay.
Navigating the hockey waters was a bit interesting.
Yeah, for sure.
Internet was not what it is today.
Uh-huh.
Really difficult coming from a non-hockey family to understand the lay of the land.
So what prep school did you go to?
To the World Hockey Center in Orangeville, just outside of Toronto.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so took off there at 16, actually. And that was my first time really out of state. I had done a couple years back and forth with the Colorado Selects, and that was my first experience in kind of that all-girls competitive atmosphere. And really, really enjoyed the competitiveness of an all-girls kind of AAA experience at U14. But the travel and not being with your team 24/7 was a different experience. And then realizing if I really wanted to go and play hockey and make more of a career than just my high school years, I needed to go away to prep school at that point in time. I don't necessarily agree with that being the case for every athlete in today's world.
Yeah. And that's what we keep preaching that here. We keep trying. Well, we're hoping as it's funny that it's taken. Well, it's not funny, but it's taken 50, 60 years of hockey here for us finally to say, you know what, let's really focus on keeping kids here and having opportunities to play on.
Yeah.
Because, man, Adam Bartholomew, who was a coach here, when we first started talking about having a podcast, I said, what should we call a Utah hockey podcast? And he said, The Road to Colorado.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's because that's
still
that's,
happening.
Yeah,
today.
That's pretty accurate. Mm-hmm. And for some people, it was the road, like you did the Colorado thing and then you did the Canada thing. And it is tough. And you have to make, at some point, you have to make that decision. Like if I want to be a hockey player, I can't do it in Utah, or at least you couldn't. There are opportunities now, and now obviously there are for women as well. But so you go to prep school, and did you go to college after that?
Great question.
Yeah.
And this is what I love about my journey. Prep school wasn't for me. As much as I loved my experience, one of my very best friends to this day, I met away at prep school. Hockey brings people all around the world together, and I love that. But prep school really, that it was a hard point in life of being on the ice multiple times a day.
Yeah.
You eat, breathe, sleep, hockey. And for me, like I said earlier, being a multi-sport athlete, I very much have my father's personality, love to be in any sort of social setting. I was pretty burnt out by the end of that experience. And And even though I was burnt out, I had made a commitment to go to a D3 college, Utica in upstate New York.
Oh, yeah.
And ultimately, long story, semi-short, chose to stay home. And boy, am I grateful I did. At the time, being 18 and listening to my intuition and making that choice, I didn't quite understand what that meant and how that was going to affect me for the rest of my life. But there was something inside me that didn't feel like it was the right thing for me to be uprooted from my family once again, to be far away from home, and really honestly at a school that didn't even support what I wanted to go into.
Oh, yeah.
And that was something along the lines of the medical field at the time. I had my master's in public health, but was pursuing all of my options at that point. And the school didn't even offer it. So here I was going to make this outrageous financial commitment, as well as really suffering in my academic pursuits, which was really my strength. I was a committed student to go play hockey. And I'm really proud that I made the decision to listen to my intuition at that point.
Man, that takes a lot for, and that's another thing we talk about on the show a lot. At 18 years old, you've got to make these huge decisions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I did the prep school route as well. And it didn't work for me, not because, you know, I was excited about the hockey multiple times. And I played multiple sports as well, which I don't talk about very often. But I played two other sports while I was there. But the main thing that got in the way for me was the actual school. They apparently wanted you to be good at school, too. And I wasn't ready for that. I wanted to play hockey and not focus on school. But they took that pretty serious. And then the fact that they wanted $18,000 a year.
Yeah.
Which that was a little tough at the time. But but now you're 18 and you're like, oh, everybody's got to be telling you, okay, well, you've got a path here. Here's hockey. And hockey's going to pay for some of school. I don't know if it's a full ride or whatever, but it's hard. And there's a kid at the U now that had an opportunity to go play.
Yeah.
And at some point, you just got to say, look, if it's not right, if it's not your time to go play NCAA, because that's such a commitment.
Yeah.
And a lot of parents don't understand that part either, because as a parent, you put your kid into it, and you're like, go play, go play. Our goal is college. You know, and that's, I would say for men, most dads are having their kid go in their goals in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
And then you say your goal is college for your kid. And for them to get there, and now you've got the pressure of, you've got an offer, you've got coaches wanting you, but your parents have to be kind of saying, hey, go that route. It's, yeah, go live there. It's tough. It's in New York, whatever. But take it. Mm-hmm. But it's good that you had the, you know, the capacity at 18 to follow your heart and your intuition, as you said, and man, just being smart enough to make those decisions, because I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I chased hockey to horrible places. And, you know, obviously that makes us who we are.
Yeah.
But it's so tough at 18 to make those decisions. And that's what I want people to understand, is that part of it, is that we put all the pressure on our kids and we want them to do this stuff. And at some point, you got to let them make their decision. And if you're a young hockey player and you're listening to this and you feel like you have an opportunity but it doesn't feel like it's right for you, then to make that choice, because you've done really well for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And some people would have been like, oh, she's making a lifetime just mistake.
Oh yeah.
But it's not a mistake.
Yeah.
It's, you know, everybody's got their own path.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't play hockey. Do you go to the U to get your undergrad?
I chose to stay home. Ended up at the U. Was a service learning scholar at the university, which essentially means you commit 400 hours of community service along with your undergraduate degree. And that was something that just spoke to my soul. I loved giving back to my community. And one of the first ways I was able to do so is through coaching.
Really?
My dad had been a longtime coach, coached at the Utah Lady Grizzlies for several years. I had played in that association, which is still up and running today, for some of my time when I was here in Utah, but was always inspired by the type of coach that he was and his ability to connect to so many people through the sport. He actually never played, and yet was very successful in so many ways, and he can't step foot in a rink today without somebody coming up and giving him a big old bear hug.
That's awesome.
And so that really Through the Service Learning Scholars opportunity at the university, committing my undergraduate years to community service.
Is that still an option?
It still is an option, and I would love to talk to anyone who's interested, not only at the University of Utah, but it's a nationwide program.
Really?
In
400 hours total in 4 years?
400, 4 years. A lot of hands-on experience in the job world. Which is great for setting your resume up for success when you enter into the workforce. And not only that, but I was able to figure out what I wanted to do, try things on without having to waste class time to do so through internships and other community hours.
What an awesome – I honestly had never heard of that. What an awesome opportunity and what a great way to learn.
Yeah, yeah. Learn what you like to do, get you in uncomfortable situations as far as for me, teaching young students how to read was not something I was super comfortable with. I could get out on the ice and coach them all day long, but to sit and really teach them vocabulary and how to get through something like literature, that was a challenge for me at 18. And so having those experiences, being able to try that on, I think helped me excel just as a human being. And it also helped to expose me to what I really wanted in my life, in my jobs, in my career path, in my community support, and then ultimately with coaching as well.
That's very cool. And it seems like it all ties in together.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so you go through all that. You become, you know, a successful master's having student. And you're on your career. And then all of a sudden you're pulled back into coaching.
Yeah. Never could have dreamt that my cards were going to play out this way, in the sense of finding that passion again through coaching. And so often I hear from other females, mostly just because that's the world I live in, is female athletics, but just anyone in the rink in particular. I think at one point we all hit that burnout phase of just kind of being done with the rink for a little while. And I definitely hit that after my prep school years and then making the decision to stay home. Like you said, I definitely had folks who were like, oh no, you're making the wrong decision.
Yeah.
But you just have to let that go and stay true to who you are.
I'd be that guy saying that too. I'm going to own up to it, because every time somebody walks away from it, I'm like, no, don't do it. You're going to regret it. I've given my son the line that I was given, that you only get so many games in this life, and it's up to you. You take away from those games. And I wholeheartedly believed in that until probably the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I see, and honestly, even people that were like, had the opportunity to go play pro. And I'm like, why wouldn't you take that? Why wouldn't you go play for the Utah Grizzlies? And guys would walk away from, you know, a contract offer from the Grizzlies. And they're like, no, because in the long run of my life, I've got bigger things to do and make more money or do this. Like, hockey was a big part of my building blocks, but now it's time that I leave hockey and go do these other things. I was always blown away by that. But now I get it. I get it a little bit more now that I'm trying to help, you know, other people see their options.
Yeah.
And these kids, you said, like with your dad, part of being a coach is you raise these kids.
Yeah.
You're the other person in their life for years. And I have kids calling me and saying, hey, what should I do? And instead of just always saying go play hockey, I honestly stop and think about it. What would be the best thing for them? And a lot of times it's not the hockey route. A lot of times it's, you know, doing the adult thing and going out and not playing the game and getting a better degree and moving on with your life or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So it's cool that you're called back into the game.
Yeah.
And tell us how this all happened.
Yeah. So called back into the game, went to a couple coaching clinics. Found that flame again and just got really excited to jump in. Started coaching with the Utah Lady Grizzlies program for a little while, and then saw the need at the younger age group, realizing the Utah Lady Grizzlies have done and are continuing to do a great job at those older ages, U16 and above. At the time, we didn't have, this is about 2007, we still didn't have options for those young Morgans, those little girls who are still playing in an all-boys environment. And I'll tell you what, as like we started at the beginning, I really enjoyed that co-ed atmosphere, but there is nothing that compares to that team camaraderie, that bond you have with each other. And you don't get that when you're not playing with the same gender. It just is not always there.
I can totally get that.
And so I saw that need and wanted to get that going for those younger girls, and not only to support the older program to build that pipeline essentially, but to keep them in the sport. I did my master's on the resiliency theory in sports and was really intrigued by that burnout rate and seeing those athletes at their peak development phase, 14 to 16 years old, for females primarily. That's peak development, and yet we're seeing them, the attrition rate just drop. People dropping out of the sport left and right.
Yeah, Mel's too, though. That's the same age group for Mel's, and they thought it was because of contact. Mm-hmm. Do you think that plays a part for the women as well? Are they being put into contact? I don't even know.
Yeah, not put into contact, just because the girls' game is always contact-free necessarily, body checking. But more, I think, just from a maturation standpoint and maturity,
right.
Those being critical development years as human beings. And so started the Lady Lightning program with Shannon Schmidt at Salt Lake County, and was successful in that for about 7 years before stepping away and turning that over. They've now combined with the Lady Grizzlies, and this is their first season as one organization.
That's where I first started hearing your name a lot, is because I would have your goalies during the summer, and then I would hear stuff about you or about the program or whatever, and then send your goalies back to you, because we'd get it was crazy, because towards the last few years of my camp, I would have five or six girl goalies every summer.
So neat.
At the beginning, it was one. It was Cammy.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it took a long time for us to build that up like that.
Yeah.
So that's cool. And that's probably, you know, part because of what you're doing.
Yeah. It's so neat to see these girls falling in love with the sport just as much or even more than I did in my adolescent and youth years. And we did just one quick story. We did a all-girls environment at the end of the season last year. It was a U-12 practice, but we invited all the U-10 and U-8 girls from the county league out with us. Half sheet of ice, an hour of ice time, and to see those 12-year-olds be mentors to those 10 and 8-year-olds.
Yeah.
And vice versa, those 8-year-olds to look up to those 12-year-olds was just absolutely priceless. And it was funny after practice. One, we couldn't get them off the ice. And two, at the end of the session, we had all the girls, didn't matter their age, kind of sitting in a circle planning their next ice session.
Cool.
And seeing how much fun they had. It was the end of the season, so we didn't have any ice. And unfortunately, their plans for Saturday could not come to fruition.
Yeah.
But needless to say, the energy, the excitement, just seeing these girls respond and react in ways that their parents, their coaches hadn't seen all year. And yet to see that same flame just reignite within their soul was so neat. And it inspires me every day, even at this college level, of the why, of the bigger purpose behind what we're doing. For these girls, for these women, and for them to be successful out in the community.
I was telling AJ last week that I stopped off at Pure Hockey, and when I walked in, there were three girls, three separate, like, there was a little girl and her mom were there buying gear, and it was so much fun to watch her go and want different sticks and, you know, looking at all the gloves, and then there was a girl probably in her 20s, and then there was a girl probably in her 40s buying gear.
Yeah.
And then me. That's the first time in my life that it's been... You know, I was the only male in the shop, and it was so cool. It was like, I love the fact that the game is growing that way, and it's so cool. All right, so now the university announces that they're going to have a team. Were you behind that, or did you come in later?
So kind of simultaneously, I had stepped away from coaching. My life had kind of gone a different route. Went through marriage, went through divorce, but through that process, stepped away from the rink. And in coming back to who I was and what my purpose was in this world, I was itching for a way to get back into the rink. We were on a trip to Europe, actually, and just was feeling called to get back in the rink and to give back, and was just pondering that whole trip of what my next journey was going to be and where I wanted to go with the game and how I could give back in the biggest, brightest way. And upon returning home, received a phone call from AJ about his aspirations to expand the Utah hockey program at the university and add in this women's team. And immediately felt like that was the answer. And what I wanted to do and what needed to be done next for girls hockey in our state. And I'm telling you, we're 2 weeks in and couldn't be more honored to be leading this ship and serving as the guide as we're building out this legacy for years to come. Not only are the girls incredible that we have within our program, but seeing the opportunities to inspire, to educate the community on girls hockey and in that the fact that it's even a sport. It's kind of funny, but living in Utah, hockey's so small in some ways still that people are like, what, girls hockey? And they often say field hockey. And then the next one I get is roller hockey. Say, no ice. And then they say, when's your season starting? We want to come to every one of your games.
Oh, that's cool.
So, yeah, the opportunity is so much bigger than any one of us. But
did you have the opportunity to really recruit and to go out and track down some players?
Recruiting was tough. So we're starting this season a little slim.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, most of my girls are from out of state.
Okay.
A handful of in-state recruits, but most are coming from surrounding states. We have folks from California, Colorado, Minnesota, Washington State. And that was all done with a $0 recruiting budget.
Right.
So
is the school giving you any money for this?
They are not. We are a club sport versus an NCAA.
Right.
So we're playing within the American Collegiate Hockey Association.
So the money comes all out of the girls' pockets.
All paid to play.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing a lot of people don't know. And now you got to get on the... Got to start marching and saying, hey, we need sponsors.
Yep. Yep. All of our girls are paying to play this season. We have several girls who have worked all summer long because hockey has touched their soul just as it has mine. And they want to be a part of this. They want to be a part of the legacy. They want to be a member of this team, this organization on campus. It really is a family. As we know, the sport of hockey innately instantly becomes your family. And multiple girls this season have just worked their tail feathers off to make this successful. And the way we can help them with that is absolutely corporate sponsors and donations coming into the sport. Every ice session, it's not like soccer where you have a field of grass
it's
to go play on.
$200 an hour.
Yep. Every single day that we're on the ice, minimum costs, let alone our travel, we're going as far as Missouri this year.
And you were saying that you might have to bus to Missouri.
Yeah, weighing our options. I mean, cost-benefit analysis. We first and foremost, we thrive off of our purpose at Utah Hockey, and that's to excel in the classroom, on the ice, and in the community. And to excel in the classroom, we have to keep these students top of mind when we're looking to pull them out of their academic courses for multiple days of travel.
Right.
Flight would definitely be preferred. All comes down to money and support. But the support of within the community thus far, being a first-year program, I have to say I am beyond grateful for those that have stepped up and are supporting us, whether that's financially or simply coming to practice and offering assistance with different specialties that they may have as a fellow coach in the community, or even social media. Letting folks around the country, around the world know by sharing, retweeting, that we're around and that we are here to make a loud noise and to be a successful program at Utah Hockey.
So how do we find this? What's your website?
Yeah, so utahhockey.com.
Yep.
The website will take you to both men's and women's programs. And you can also find our schedule there. We start mid-October with games. We're practicing now, getting ready for our first inaugural season, and we'll go October through December, take a break, same with the school schedule, and then we pick back up again January through March, making our run for the national tournament in Dallas the end of March.
That's cool. So the website, you have a Facebook page.
Yep.
You have a very active goaltender on social media. She seems to post all the time. I'm going to have her on the show, too.
Uh-huh.
So these things are helping you grow. We want to help you grow as well. I'm excited. Like I really am excited to see this. And I got to see a lot of really good female hockey, women's hockey, in the past. Like with other colleges, I got to see at North Dakota when Cammie was coaching there. I followed that quite a bit, and you watch those U.S. Canada games, and it's becoming physical. No contact, but those games are definitely contact.
Oh, yeah.
And the passion behind it, the fan base that's behind it now, and I say it's just like the U.S. Women's National Team for soccer. Like, people are getting behind it, and the more teams that are like this, yeah, you might be starting out thin this year, but now that people know that you're here, there are going to be young women and high school seniors that see this as a huge opportunity for them. And just like with the boys, we've had so many girls that got good that are playing at other universities now.
Yeah.
And we've talked about playing NCAA Division III doesn't always come with a full ride scholarship, and you play at a school that's tuition is $60,000 to $80,000, or you could stay here and still play the game you love and get a degree from the University of Utah and play ACHA and still have a ton of fun and not be in as much debt when you're done, or maybe not in any debt. What an opportunity.
Oh yeah, I'm so excited about it. I look back at my own journey and that's the athlete I am, and always was at heart. Wanted to play the game, play at a super high level, be competitive. Like you said, the game is still very physical. It is very fast, and the ACHA we're playing in the women's Division I level within, absolutely no joke. It is so much fun to be a part of, and yet these girls still get to be who they are, be their unique selves, do what they want to do on campus, multiple girls within the medical field, studying in rigorous career paths.
Yeah. Engineering.
Engineering, you name it, we have it. Architecture is another one. But that's what ACHA hockey is.
Yeah.
To me, what I tell every parent and every aspiring athlete is find the right path for you. You may be that Division I or Division III NCAA athlete, but you may also be a college somebody in college who wants to do multiple things. You want to put academics top of mind, and not that you can't at Division I or Division III, but you are an athlete as well, and the demands are quite rigorous. And ACHA helps to provide that balance in so many ways, and couldn't be more thrilled to not only start this program at the University of Utah, but to help other programs around the Western states evolve and bring their programs to light too, because we're absolutely stronger together, not only as just hockey players, but in the women's hockey world. Like I said, we're traveling significant distances this fall. And if we have more teams out west, not only does that cut down on travel costs, it builds our Western Women's Hockey League. It also helps for more girls to continue to play the game well into their adulthood and as they enter into their careers.
That's awesome. Okay, well, that's great. So if you're looking for a way to sponsor, or you want to look at the schedule, you want to look at the roster and see who these girls are, and just go check them out. I guarantee I'm going to be at a ton of the games. It's universityofutahockey.com.
Yep.
It's a great website.
Hockey, sorry.
Oh, man. I knew I was going to mess up. Josh, our producer, was telling AJ last week, he was just like, man, this is one of the best websites that I've seen around here. It really is. You guys have done an outstanding job. It's first-class organization all the way through, and we're excited for the season. So thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
And if you're looking for more hockey, you want to follow the Utah Puck Report. It's super simple. Just jump on kslsports.com and look for podcasts right there. If you're looking for an even easier way, tough to say, but easy to do. Just text the word puck to 57500, and just like that, you're subscribed to this podcast. And we're looking forward to the University of Utah hockey, even though, I'm a Weber State grad, but I did play a season and a half at the U when I was there getting my EMT. That's actually what I got there, which actually I have a degree in criminology that does nothing for me, and I have an EMT certification from the U that I use to make a living. So the U is an awesome place to be, and thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
And that's it for the Utah Puck Report.